Welcome to the Campus Preacher Podcast. I'm your host, Keith Thurl. This is episode 34, Me Too, David, and Virgins Marrying Their Rapists.
Behold, a sower went forth to sow, bearing precious seed in his hand, hoping and hope that he might see it grow. Knowing that the harvest might well come before the bloom.
Welcome, everybody, to the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network, flfnetwork.com, Campus Preacher Podcast, or I wanted to say crosspolitik.com. This is the Campus Preacher Podcast, a podcast designed to encourage and equip you in the work of evangelism. And I'm actually broadcasting as I'm going across 90 in the state of New York, and I'm going to head to Ohio for the weekend, then hopefully swing over to Virginia and points south, and then I'm going to head up into the Northwest. And I'm coming off one of my favorite weeks. It's been a really strange 2 weeks. So 2 weeks ago, all hell broke loose on a campus. Then I've bumped into a lot of rocky weather, and then I just went to a campus because it really went a little crazy a week ago, and I just literally was sitting in my chair. I didn't even get a chance to preach because people just started gathering. The police were there within 10 minutes of my arrival, and it just kind of snowballed, which was fine. It ended up, being somewhat of a fruitful day, but one of the things I think is more clear to me is we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against the powers, rulers, and principalities of this present dark age that we're fighting against. Because the only thing that can explain a lot of the thinking and the stuff going on in these students is obviously the sinfulness of man, but also I believe powers and principalities, I think, helps make a lot of sense of what is going on. And but yesterday was actually one of my favorite days, maybe of the semester. Had a really good crowd, had a really good interaction, and there were several things that really stood out. But probably the two things stand out particularly from that day is there was a young Muslim woman there. I believe her name was Shana, and so she actually said she was a Christian who converted to Islam. She was growing up a Christian and converted to Islam, but she really listened. So as soon as I started preaching. As soon as I start preaching, I'm kind of looking at everybody's body language. I'm kind of seeing kind of who I can try to build off of, if they roll their eyes or even if they're really attentive. And for me, oftentimes, what's kind of funny is if someone's really attentive early on, I'm often hesitant to go into crowd building mode. And what crowd building mode is, where like you're throwing a little bit more bread on the water, a little more red meat, and trying to draw people out with questions and stuff like that. And right off the bat, I could tell that she was interested in what I was saying. And so it was kind of hard to transition to a little more like, all right, let's poke the crowd a little bit and see if we can get this thing going. But within minutes, I mean, big crowd gathered. And fortunately, pretty quiet, pretty subdued. They really just listened. And as we started to talk more, I ended up just laying out, look, here's what's going to happen today. I'm going to make my arguments. And what's going to happen is you guys will attack me. I'll be called a racist. We won't even be talking about race. I'll be called a racist. I'll be called a sexist. I'll be called a homophobe. I'll be called a bigot. And I'll be called, well, you're an effing white male. And sure enough, all of that stuff begins to take place throughout the day. And nobody actually addressed anything I was actually saying. And the thing that was interesting to me, though, was you have this Muslim girl who was adamantly defending me, when people would come up and they'd throw out random comments and stuff like that, she would step back and be like, no, that's not what he said. That's not what he said. And she'd say, you're right. All they can do is attack you. They don't actually get at your arguments. And so that was pretty, it's great when someone gets it. And there are a myriad of people that actually got it. That was pretty exciting. But So there are actually a handful of people that got it, which is always encouraging, and it was a compliment. I was told that you remind me of Ben Shapiro, but not an intolerant a-hole, is the language this young woman used, not the Muslim, but another young woman. And the reality of it is, many students there defended Ben that he's not that. And so, you know, I don't know Ben Shapiro well enough to know what his total disposition is. A little bit I have seen of him, he hasn't come across as a total, like, shock jockey sort of person who you would call an a-hole. But I guess if you disagree with him, that's kind of the nature of the discourse, and I get that quite a bit. I'm not usually told that I am tolerant. I mean, often described as intolerant because even if I just say Christianity's true and all that sort of stuff. So if you say it, you're going to be hit with those labels. So there's a lot of stuff to kind of tease out there. But then the other highlight, and man, I am so bad with names. I can't remember if the young man's name was Joshua or if it was Jeremy, but he came up to me at the end of the day. So I stopped, went to use the restroom, came out, and I was talking to an atheist. An atheist was waiting for me, and he was kind of asking, why Christianity? And so we start going back and forth a little bit, and it comes to the place of either the world is meaningful or it's not meaningful, either the world has logos, John 1 sort of thing, or it doesn't. And I would just say I don't believe that atheism can account for that. And if there is the logos, and you know, logic and rationality and reason and all that sort of stuff makes sense, and if there is no logos, then you know, it's all meaningless. And he wanted to be kind of a materialist and naturalist in his outlook, and then I was just kind of leaning in and saying, look, if that's really the case, then there are no reasons for your beliefs. You're just kind of chemical reactions going off. He's like, yeah, that's it. I was like, all right, well, then I won't really debate you much because you have no reasons for what you believe. You just kind of believe it because of chemical reactions. He's like, yeah. I was like, all right, so I'll tap out. And it was kind of funny. He was annoyed that I didn't want to discuss it anymore. But you reach a certain place in the conversation where either reason is there and it's something that should have some sort of authority in your thinking, or it's not there. And if it's not there, then trying to have a reasonable discourse with somebody kind of becomes meaningless. So I offered him up my Bible. I was like, have you ever read the Bible? He's like, I've read a little bit, but not much. I was like, well, read the Bible. And he didn't. And I was like, I'll even give you mine. He's like, I don't have one. I was like, I'll give you mine. And he didn't want to want mine. So he walks off, and a young man comes up to me, and very humble. He was a Korean student, and he was just like, I kind of have a little bit of a church background, but I'm just kind of lost, and I know nothing. And he's like, yeah, I heard you tell that guy that you would give him your Bible. Could I have your Bible if it's not like sentimental value to anything like that? Would you mind if I ask you for it? And I was like, yeah, you can have my Bible. And I was like, and he's like, what do I do? And I was like, well, just read it. And he kind of said he was going to like a campus ministry on campus a little bit. And he's like, what do? Just read the literature? And I was like, yeah, just start reading. And it's like anything. You just got to get immersed into it. And eventually the pieces will start coming together. But very early on, it's often very confusing and daunting just because there's a lot there that you're unfamiliar with. But, you know, that's like any subject that you get to study in school. If you're not familiar with it, it's all kind of new and confusing, and then eventually you'll realize you have a grasp of it. And so I gave him my Bible, and I was like, all right, well, just start with the Gospels. And he said, what are the Gospels? And I was like, man, every day I'm on campus, I'm realizing more and more the people I'm interacting with, even people with a little bit of a church background, and we can complain about the churches and blah, 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 but people just don't know. People don't have a clue what is actually being taught, what is actually being said, what the scriptures teach. They have broad ideas, something about gay, something about hell, something about Jesus, blah, blah, blah. That very vague concepts of what Christianity is. And it's incumbent upon us to explain to people, what Christianity is and what all it means and everything else. And so I gave him the Bible. I told him to read the Gospels. I put my information on a card, slid it into the Gospels, and hopefully that young man will read it. But what the thing that kind of impressed me the most in my brief interaction with him was, just his willingness to say, I don't know anything. And how often I interact with people who don't know anything, and they're afraid to say, I don't know anything. And that's even one of the things that we want to have that humility ourselves, because there are a lot of topics I simply don't know anything about, and I need the willingness to say, I don't know. So it was really good day, and I really enjoyed the ability to, evangelize. And so what I want to do this week, actually, is finish up the discussion on David, Bathsheba, Me Too, and actually Deuteronomy 22 and the concept of rape in a in the Bible. Okay, so last week we brushed on David, Bathsheba, and kind of the whole idea that, you know, that's now being judged and run through the grid of Me Too. And the basic idea there is what's being portrayed in 2 Samuel is not either a power play rape per se. I don't think that's the purpose of the text, nor is it a violent rape, as we often understand the term rape. But rather, the main thrust of the text is that David is fallen. There's a really good tweet thread by a pastor named Steve Wedgeworth that's worth looking up on that topic, and he just kind of breaks down all the much of the passage and just kind of show it does not fit a Me Too paradigm. And so I that just kind of answers the basic trajectory of what's going on in 2 Samuel. Now, the thing that comes up for me oftentimes on campus is all will be asked if a virgin needs to marry her rapist. So in Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 28 and 29, the text says this.
says, if a man meets a virgin who is not betrothed and seizes her and lies with her, and they are found, then the man who lay with her shall give to the father of the young woman 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has violated her. He may not divorce her all his days. And so someone reads that. If you read an NIV version, I do believe that it does use the term rape instead of seizes. And so what's going on there? Does a virgin who is raped, does she need to marry her rapist? Our answer, my answer, is no. I'm saying our because the clip I'm going to play, I'm being asked about my friend's position. And so the answer is no. And how do we kind of get this? So there are a couple layers here, and you're going to have to make your own decision of whether or not you're persuaded of my basic approach. But following a gentleman by the name of Caleb Carmichael, who basically argues that the laws of Deuteronomy are a reflection of the historical narratives in the Pentateuch on through, I believe, maybe 2 Samuel. It might even include the Kings. I can't remember. But at least a lot of the Deuteronomy laws are a reflection on the patriarchal narrative of what's going on in the book of Genesis. And one of the things that he ties in is in Genesis 34, you have the defiling of Dinah. And some people would argue Dinah's raped. Other people will argue that she was not raped. And you're going to have to make your own decision on whether you think she was or not. I don't believe the thrust of the story is a rape narrative, but I think the thrust of the story is, again, another type of fall that took place. And so starting in 34:1, it says, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the women of the land." And I think that thrust, that she went out to see the women of the land, and unfortunately, I don't remember it off the top of my head, but earlier in the book of Genesis, it refers to the women of the land, like basically do not get him a wife from the women of the land. And so the idea of women of the land in the book of Genesis is seen negatively, that it is not the women of Israel type of thing. And so I do think this idea of Dinah going out to see the women of the land is along the lines of leaving her father's household, leaving Israel, and kind of being in that context. And so the question becomes, now, when Shechem sees her and seizes her, I think what we should see is again, another fall, a violation narrative going on. I don't think it has to be, the seeing and the seizing does not have to be a violent act, but rather it is a violation. And so I don't think it's, as we would understand the term, to be a rape, but I see it as a violation. In this instance, an uncircumcised man having sex with the daughter of Israel, and that being a violation. And that's why the story ends with circumcision. And if you hop down to verse 14, it says, "We cannot do this thing." This is the sons of Jacob speaking. "We cannot do this thing, give our sister to them. It says, to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us." Another version says, a folly to us. And so the idea of her being with an uncircumcised man, I think much of the polemic going on here is the idea of basically intermarriage with foreign nations, so to speak. Now, obviously, the context of Deuteronomy 22 is not necessarily sex with a foreigner, per se, men outside of Israel. So it doesn't fit the context perfectly, but what Caleb Carmichael argues and has persuaded me is that what's going on there is the law in Deuteronomy 22 is actually limiting the response of the family to someone who has violated their sister. So in Genesis chapter 34, the man whose sister is violated, they take great vengeance. And in this context, it's obviously dealing with a foreigner, but also in the context of Israel, they would have wanted to protect their sister. That's what's going on, I believe, in the Deuteronomy 22, as well as the Genesis 34. And a lot of this also ties in with Exodus chapter 22. And so if you think of Deutero as two, Nomi law, it's the second giving of the law. And in Exodus chapter 22, verse 16, it says this, "If a man seduces a virgin who is not betrothed and lies with her, he shall give the bride price for her and make her his wife. If her father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money equal to the bride price for virgins." So I also believe that Deuteronomy is dealing with much more of this idea of a seduction, the taking of sex in a context that is not appropriate for the people of Israel. So I believe that's what's much more of what's going on here than much of our modern rape discussions. So when someone asks me out on campus, I got to try to keep it ABCs, but here's that discussion that I had on campus a couple weeks ago.
So a lot of people are like confused on who's saying that if a girl is raped, then she should marry that person who...
We don't believe that.
You don't believe that?
No. No, we don't believe that. I don't know what he said. I didn't get to hear him, but I would say neither of us believe that. We're often accused of saying that because in Deuteronomy chapter 2, verse 28, it says that if a virgin is taken outside the city and then the guy is to marry her. So what the debate is over is how do we understand Deuteronomy chapter 22, verses 28 and 29. We don't believe that what's going on there is what our modern concept of rape. What is going on there, we would say that, I realize it's still people don't like it, but the reality of it is, we would say, theoretically speaking, anybody, the first person you had sex with, biblically speaking, you were to marry that person. And we don't like that idea. We're like, we want to be permissive. Are you kidding me? Obligation time? So in the taking of her, because there was a familial aspect to sex. Nowadays, even when I was growing up, if some guy touched my sister, even if she consented, I'd still want to fight him. You guys are like, oh, whatever. I don't know what your mindset is, but it seems the idea of like, oh, well, if that's what she wants to do. So biblically, it was far more we seek to protect our sister. And so there would have been a familial aspect because you're uniting families together and everything else. And so none of us believe that a woman who's raped has to marry that. And we would go so far, I would go so far, and I've heard him say, we would say if a woman's raped in this campus, a guy who did it should be executed. Okay. That's what we'd maintain. A rapist should be killed.
That's a little bit better. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What if that guy was a Christian? Would he go to hell?
Yeah. I would say a guy who's raping a woman does not understand the grace of God and the love of God. First, the book in the New Testament, there's a book, 1 John, it says if anybody hates their neighbor, you can't say that you love God and hate your neighbor. God who you have that seen, your neighbor you have seen. If you hate your neighbor, you're under the wrath of God, is what 1 John tells us. No murderer has life in them. The guy who's raping a woman, it's not about sex. It's about murdering somebody. It's about trying to take from somebody. And so I think that person should be executed, and it is not a Christian act to rape somebody.
What if you were to go and kill someone who murdered her or raped your sister? Would you go to hell?
The difference would be justice in that instance. So
if someone maybe attacked my mother and I were to go kill him, that's justice?
Absolutely. If I'm out here shooting this campus up and a cop guns me down, think about it. No, come reason. So if I'm on this campus, I'm shooting it up, and a cop shoots me down, he's not a murderer. He defended the innocent. I'm the murderer. So there's a difference between murder and the shedding of blood. Someone killing somebody, not all killing is murder. And so if I was to attack this young woman and you punched me in the nose, you're not guilty of assault. I'm the one assaulting her. And your love for her should compel you to bam, bam, bam. And when you have children one day, if someone comes in to hurt them, your love for them will compel you to pour your wrath out on them. And that's why there's a hell, because God loves the world. And God's love for the world compels him to judge it in righteousness. So there, you don't have this huge dichotomy between how can a loving God send people to hell? How does a loving God deal with evil? That's the real biblical dilemma. And our message is he deals with it in the cross. A dead Jew solves the problem of God's hatred of your sin and yet his love for you. And the remedy is the cross of Christ.
What about forgiveness?
And as that clip was going out, you may have heard the man, well, what about forgiveness? And in that context, I reiterated the death, the burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ is our hope for forgiveness. It's the gospel. It is the cross that is the Christian hope. So that's the trajectory by which we seek to address that answer. So, if you're ever out doing apologetics and someone brings up Deuteronomy chapter 22, you can hopefully memorize Exodus 22 and Genesis 34 and try to tie those things together. So I'd encourage you to meditate upon those things, see if you think they make sense. I know for some people they don't, other people they do. But that's where I'm coming from. So that's this episode of the Campus Future Podcast. So if you have any questions, comments, demands, rebukes, exhortations, feel free to contact me, Keith@campuspreacher.com, on the Twitter, Campus Evangel, Instagram, Campus Preacher, and Facebook, Keith Darrell. So feel free to look me up. Any questions, comments, demands, rebukes, exhortations. The Lord bless you, keep you. Talk to you next week.
Hoping and hope that he might see it grow. Knowing that the harvest might well come before the bloom. He runs on his way, there's no time to be going slow. Hurry, take what you've got, do with it what you can. 'Cause the good God in heaven needs us, so we're